From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. The Artist's Way, a course in discovering and recovering your creative self, first landed in bookstores before the age of Amazon in 1992. Almost three decades later, author Julia Cameron can point to a long list of published works, more than 40, fiction and nonfiction, and many of them bestsellers. They include The Vein of Gold, The Right to Write, Finding Water, Transitions, and her own memoir, Floor Sample. The woman dubbed the Queen of Change by the New York Times has used her own life as a laboratory for developing her processes. New York Magazine reports Cameron's books on creativity sell to the tune of 100,000 per year. The Artist's Way alone has sold more than 5 million copies. Long lists of celebrities credit Cameron's work with their own creative journeys, including author Elizabeth Gilbert, photographer Helmut Newton, and musicians Alicia Keys and Pete Townsend. Julia Cameron is also a screenwriter, playwright, songwriter, and poet. But the reason we called on her today had less to do with profiling one artist's life, although we'll learn some about her. It had more to do with finding out where and how the call to creativity is emerging now. While millions of people around the world self-isolate to slow the spread of COVID-19, some are finding new ways of skidding down a flight of stairs. Check out TikTok for ideas. Others note in excruciating detail the pair of mallards visiting the backyard each afternoon. Still others are fostering or adopting new pets. But how is this new space in our lives taking shape as the busyness of the world is put on hold? Are there new opportunities to hear a deeper, more meaningful call? Today, Julia Cameron is with us to explore these questions. She joins us now. Julia Cameron, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel. Good to be here.
It's great to have you with us. And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Have you read The Artist's Way? Do you prioritize creative exploits in your life? Why or why not? Tell us about it. Or if you have a question for Julia Cameron, you can reach us today via email at coastline@whqr.org during the live Wednesday discussion. I'm still broadcasting, of course, from a home studio, so we cannot take phone calls. But again, that email address is coastline@whqr.org. Julia Cameron, you often start your case for creativity with the idea that everyone is creative. I know people that will argue with that idea. Why do you believe it? And why do you think that's an important idea to accept?
Well, I think we have a very negative mythology about creativity. I think that we're brought up believing that creativity is the bailiwick of an elite few. And what I have found working with my tools and working with some very unlikely candidates is that we are all creative. And I think it's important to say that it's a part of our spiritual DNA. And just like we don't have to invent our blood, we don't have to invent our creativity. So I'm 72 years old. I've been teaching 40 years, and I have found that people unblock with the use of just a few simple tools. And I believe that I have never met someone who was genuinely non-creative.
You said you've worked with some unlikely cases or people. What do you mean by that? Who falls into the category of unlikely?
Well, I'm thinking of a judge named Richard, who had been a lawyer and then became a judge, but he always dreamed of being a sculptor. And he worked with the tools, and he emerged as a sculptor, which was a lifelong dream, which didn't seem very likely for your honor.
Now, was he someone who made a living eventually as a sculptor?
He kept it as a sideline. I think it's important. This is a good point that you've brought up. We have a lot of mythology that says real artists make a living at their art. And so people often set a very high bar. They write a novel and then they say, well, if it doesn't become a bestseller, I'm a failure. And what I've found is that when people work with unblocking their creativity, things that previously were considered hobbies become more important. Which isn't to say that sometimes when people work in their creativity, they have a breakthrough and it becomes lucrative. But we shouldn't make its being lucrative the bar by which we judge our work.
So commercial success is not the end. What does unblocking creativity do for a person? Why is it important? Why is it important that my great aunt sits in her craft room and works on mosaics that will never
Well,
sell in a gallery? Why is that important? What does it do for her?
I think we're talking about something that sounds sort of old-fashioned, which would be called fulfilling your soul. And I think that as you work on your creativity, what happens is that you automatically expand your spirituality, and you begin to have a sense of a benevolent something overlooking the world. And as you make that connection, you begin to find that you're more joyful. So I find that when people work on their creativity, they become happy. And I think particularly now, when we're all hunkered down, locked down, isolated, a little bit desolate, and we find ourselves with sort of enforced solitude and asking ourselves, well, who am I if I'm not my job, if I'm not my travel calendar, if I'm not my productivity for a paycheck? When we find ourselves asking introspective questions, it's a very good time to start using artist's way tools.
How would you talk to someone who doesn't believe in God, spirituality, the validity of a higher power?
Well, I think as you noticed when you read The Artist's Way, right in the very beginning, I say, don't let semantics be a bar for you. If you're agnostic or atheist, the tools will still work for you. And you will have an awakening, although you may not call it a spiritual awakening. So I don't think it matters if you believe in God or not. I want to say, well, perhaps God believes in you.
And this is something that is so interesting about your work. The New York Times has written about you several times. New York Magazine has written about you. The LA Times, The Cut seems to be obsessed with you. There are a couple of articles they've published. Megan O'Connell in 2016 wrote, and this is, I think, this is meant to illustrate this kind of tension that some people come at the artist's way with this skepticism, call it cynicism, call it wounded artist, I don't know. But she writes, everything about the book is mortifying and it totally set me free. Its ridiculousness is it's
Everything about the book is mortifying. I've
yes.
never read this article, so this is a surprise to me.
Good. Well, I will have to send this to you. But I just thought she captured this really well for people who don't embrace this sort of thing, at face value. She says, and it totally set me free. Its ridiculousness is matched only by its effectiveness. Embrace it, hide the book when you aren't using it, read it when no one else is around. It's fine. And of course, there are plenty of glowing reviews of The Artist's Way, but I thought O'Connell's piece, even the headline, "This Terrible Self-Help Book is Actually Making Me a Better Artist," is emblematic of that blocked artist to begin with. So can you talk a little bit about the blocked artist idea and why people can sometimes get so angry about delving into the into their own creativity?
Well, I think, first of all, The Artist's Way says right on the cover, a spiritual path to higher creativity. So skeptics beware, you've been warned already. then we talk right away about the importance of learning to move beyond semantics. I think it's a pragmatic course, and I'm sorry that she was so embarrassed by the book that she felt she had to hide it. I think that people who are blocked are pretty desperate, and they stand open-minded to anything which will actually help them.
And we're going to explore more of that idea when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline. Julia Cameron, best-selling author of The Artist's Way, is with us today. When we come back from this break, we'll hear from some listeners. You can ask your own question by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're exploring creativity today, what it is, what it does, and how to bring more of it into daily life with Julia Cameron, best-selling author of The Artist's Way. If you'd like to ask your own question or tell us about your experience with your own creativity, what has it meant in your life? And is that changing in the era of coronavirus? If so, how? Tell us about it or ask a question during the live April 15th discussion by sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. Just a reminder, phone lines are not open while we broadcast from a home studio. Julia Cameron, just before we went to break, you were explaining how people you would consider blocked artists can sometimes react with anger or extreme skepticism to some of the tools. And I want to let you finish that thought before we get on to some of the questions from listeners. So recap, a blocked artist can begin this process with some pretty serious anger. And what is that? Where is it coming from?
Well, I think that we live in a culture where artists are squelched, where very often we don't receive enough support for our work, and we become discouraged, and frequently people become blocked. And what happens is that they have sort of pushed down a genuine rage. And I think we talk about people being skeptical, but what happens when people start to use the tools is that very often they're brushing off buried dreams. And the very act of brushing off the dream could often send a high-voltage adrenaline surge through a person that comes out as anger. And I think we should talk about morning pages, which are 3 pages of longhand morning writing that you do first thing upon awakening. And I often think they should be called morning pages, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, because when people first undertake them, they may experience grief, anger, skepticism, but skepticism melts pretty quickly in the face of the breakthroughs that people have from using the tools. And I think, again, I'm sorry that our writer was embarrassed by the book. I think before I wrote The Artist's Way, I wanted to be very cool. I was writing for Rolling Stone, New York Magazine, The Washington Post, The New York Times, and I was concerned that I looked hip. And then when I started writing The Artist's Way, I began to write from a spirit of service. What do people need to know? What had I discovered in my own creative practice? And I stopped being so hip. So what happened was I wrote the book, and then a lot of hip people ended up saying they liked it. So I stopped being so embarrassed by my own naivete, and I began to say, well, the tools actually work, so let's try them.
Authenticity became more important than your idea of what a writer was, and which reminds me of something you wrote in Finding Water. You say, if we have plain old ordinary fear, then we are within reach of a solution. Artistic fear sounds somehow nastier and more virulent, like it just might not yield to ordinary solutions. And yet it does. The moment we become humble enough to try ordinary solutions, it is only by courting humility, you write, that we stand a chance as artists. This sounds to me like a sort of get over yourself essay. How do we court humility?
Well, this is what happens when you write morning pages. Rachel, do you do the pages?
Yes, I do. I'm admitting that. Yes, I've been aware of and working with The Artist's Way for many years.
So then you know that as you write, you become authentic, and you're sort of sending a telegram to the universe that says, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. And pages are a place where you could vent and be petty and be frightened. And as you do all of that, you become more authentic. And when you become more authentic, you become more humble.
Yeah. Judy writes, please ask Ms. Cameron if she ever goes back after a time and reads her morning pages. She says, I took her course here in Wilmington several years ago, did the morning pages exercise throughout the course. We were told not to go back and read them. Judy says, I did not, but I saved them in my file cabinet. Just recently, I ran across that brown envelope of writings and started to peek in, but something held me back. Should I read them now? And Julia Cameron, don't you say later in The Artist's Way, there's actually an exercise, or at least one, maybe more, about going back and reading them?
Well, what I tell people is try and let maybe 9 weeks go by, 10 weeks go by, and then the task is now read your morning pages and use a couple different color magic markers to indicate here's a good idea, here's something I'm procrastinating about, here's something I'm fearful about. And I want to warn you that reading morning pages, the pages may be boring. And people may find some good ideas, some nuggets of creativity, but they may find a lot more of the daily laundry. Is it Judy? Is that her name?
Yes.
So, Judy, read them at your own risk. I would be much more concerned that you be writing them now than that you be rereading ones from several years ago.
So, Julia, some of the points that you've made here for folks who aren't familiar with Morning Pages is that it's okay if it's a laundry list. It's okay if it's a petty, ego-filled rant. It's okay if it's not even grammatically correct or good writing in any way, shape, or form. What are the Morning Pages supposed to do if they're not supposed to be necessarily a record, a well-written record of our lives? What do they do?
Well, I think of them as being like a whisk broom, that you take a little broom of the pages and you poke it into all the corners of your life and you whisk the debris into the center of the room where you can look at it. And it's important that people realize that they're not intended to be art, that they're not intended to even be artful or well-written. What they are is an exercise. Again, I'm going back to our skeptic. When you use Morning Pages, you begin to become connected with synchronicity, which is sort of the benevolent working out of events through coincidence. And what ends up happening is that if people use the Morning Pages and use a second tool, which is called an artist's date, people begin to feel a sense of spiritual connection, and the world begins to seem to be a more benevolent place. We have a sense of expansion. If you're writing Morning Pages, they'll make a suggestion, and you'll think, oh, I couldn't do that. And then a few days later, they'll suggest it again, and you'll think, I don't think I could do that. And then when they suggest it for the third time, you'll say, oh, all right, I'll try that. And you begin to expand. You begin to take risks. Morning Pages change our creative height.
What is the point of allowing ourselves to move into a more creative life and wind up making bad art?
You are full of skeptical questions this morning.
Yes, I am. I'm also in news.
Well, and people will often say to me, Julia, aren't you afraid you're unblocking a lot of bad art?
Right.
And I have to say that my experience is actually the opposite. What I find is that many times the people whose art is unblocked are extremely talented, and perhaps more talented than some of the artists that we acclaim. A lot of times it's hubris that moves somebody center stage, boldness, not talent. So I'm thinking of a woman that I worked with in Chicago who was in her mid-50s, and she had always wanted to try playwriting, but she was afraid to write for fear of what she would find in her Morning Pages. So she initially had the anger and the grief that we were talking about before. And what happened is that she wrote pages, she unblocked, she tried, after being egged on by her pages, she tried to write a play, and she ended up becoming an award-winning playwright. And you read the play and you think, how could she not have known for 50 years that she was a wonderful artist? Again, this comes back, I think, Rachel, to our mythology, where we say artists, we have a mythology that says real artists have no fear.
Yes.
And then we feel fear and we think, oh, I'm not a real artist, and we disqualify ourselves. And so what happens when you begin to move through the fear, is that you begin to realize that real artists are people who have learned to create despite the fear, not without the fear.
You're listening to Coastline. Julia Cameron is the best-selling author of The Artist's Way. She's taking your questions and comments on this Wednesday, April 15th. Have you worked with the ideas in The Artist's Way? Tell us about it by sending an email during the live Wednesday discussion to coastline@whqr.org. And Julia, we have an email from David who says, Julia, thank you so much for your work in The Artist's Way. I started this January and have not missed one day of my morning pages. Wow. I look forward to it. My artist date got a little more challenging during this shelter-in-place period, yet I managed to stay active. This has been a great lesson in discipline and digging into the fact that I am not lazy. I was blocked. David writes, I have found what I truly love, drawing and illustration, and they were always my true loves creatively. The language you used resonated with me as I am in recovery. This has been amazing. Thank you. I'm now on the 12th week, and my question is, do you recommend to take some time off and go through The Artist's Way again and revisit as time goes on? Julia, what would you say to David?
David, don't take time off. I want you to keep working with the tools. And what you will find is, as you've spoken, during the 12 weeks, you experience a change in trajectory. And what happens if you keep using the tools beyond the 12 weeks is that you experience a change in terms of life-altering productivity. So I think it's important to keep right up with the tools. They're working, so let them work. A lot of people go back and go through The Artist's Way again right away. I think that's fine. Or I think you can read Finding Water or Walking in This World, and those give you more tools. But I'm delighted that, you know, one of the things that I find myself doing during the virus is sketching. And I don't think of myself as an artist, but it's profoundly satisfying.
You don't think of yourself as an artist, as a sketch artist?
Right. I have a sister, Libby, who is a profoundly gifted visual artist. And I found that I use words. And lately I've been not using words. And I've been sketching. And it's very enjoyable. But it sounds like David came home to a true love.
Yeah. And Gary writes, I discovered, and this has to do with the coronavirus era. He says, I discovered artwork inspiration along the trail of a lake in Leland, North Carolina. Children had drawn chalk flowers, bees, rainbows, and inspirational phrases along the mile or more of pavement. These works inspired me beyond words to keep hope in these times of virus, social distancing, and isolation. Rainbow came the next week and washed away the chalk, but not the inspiration from the hands of the artists. Thanks to the children. Are you seeing people engaging more this way, Julia Cameron, since so many millions of people have had to self-isolate?
Yes. One of the things, I have a website, juliacameronlive.com, and we get queries on how do you do an artist date when you're in the middle of the virus shutdown? And I say, well, there are many things you can do. You can listen to a podcast that you previously thought was frivolous. You can listen to music that you don't normally listen to. You can watch a movie on Netflix, or you can go to the tasks of The Artist's Way. There are 10 tasks at the end of each chapter, and many of the tasks in the ends of the chapters make wonderful artist dates.
And speaking of artist dates, Anonymous says, thanks for hosting this interview with Julia Cameron. I'm currently in the middle of Cameron's 12-week process, and I'm seeing some wonderful serendipitous occurrences, this radio broadcast being one of them, she says. Since we're in the middle of a stay-in-place ordinance, I'd love to get suggestions of possible artist dates aside from trips out in nature. Is this something Julia can speak to?
I think we just did.
Yes. And we have another email that I'll get to in a second. But I want to talk about this idea of frivolity and the artist date. Because as you've said, there are two main tools that are part of the artist way, morning pages and the artist date. And you told Penelope Green for the New York Times just last year that through this work, your students aren't trying to fix themselves. Rather, you said they learn to accept themselves. And you said that you think your work makes people autonomous and that you feel like people fall in love with themselves. So talking again to this type A person who doesn't want to fall into a soft, blurry place of acceptance, but wants to better themselves, wants to hone their abilities, fix themselves. If I accept myself, won't I become a blob of mediocrity? And I'll let you answer that when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline. Julia Cameron of The Artist's Way, Vein of Gold, The Right to Write is with us today and answering your questions on this Wednesday, April 15th. You can ask a question or tell us whether and how a creative exploit has emerged in your life as you self-isolate during the pandemic. Our email address is coastline@whqr.org. We'll be back after this short break. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, Julia Cameron, the queen of change, according to the New York Times, and author of The Artist's Way, a course in discovering and recovering your creative self, is with us today. And we want to hear from you. What role do creative pursuits play in your own life? Has the importance of creativity grown or diminished since the stay-at-home orders dropped? Tell us about it, or ask Julia Cameron a question during the live discussion on this Wednesday, April 15th. You can send an email to coastline@whqr.org. This is the last segment, so just a few minutes left to get your question or comment in. And Julia Cameron, just before we went to break, I asked you about you saying that you think of your work as making people autonomous and you feel like people fall in love with themselves through your work. And instead of asking about the amorphous blob of mediocrity, let me flip that. What is the upside to seeing people fall in love with themselves? Why is that a good, positive thing?
Well, I think, again, we've got a skeptical question coming at me about, aren't you afraid of becoming an amorphous blob? And what I find is that morning pages actually give you a much clearer sense of yourself. And at this point, we have 5 million people who are not amorphous blobs, who have found themselves feeling a more acute sense of self. And I think that it's important to recognize that when we say falling in love with ourselves and accepting ourselves, we don't mean some sort of jelly-like state. We actually mean that we have a firm assessment of ourselves. And I think I want to say that in the time since I wrote The Artist's Way, I now think there are three tools. The third tool, which we cannot unfortunately practice during the virus, is going for a walk. And I think that what happens when you do morning pages, artist dates, and walks, or maybe you're allowed to walk with masks in South Carolina, are you? Are you allowed out of the house?
Yeah, actually, yes. People are allowed out for necessities, for things like grocery shopping and even outdoor recreating, as long as they keep social distance. So in many neighborhoods, people are still running and walking and biking. Yes.
Well, what happens when you do that is that your intuition is heightened. And again, I think, you know, people think of intuition as being something sort of amorphous and airy-fairy. And what I find is that it's often very pointed. I recently made a commitment to teach over the internet, and I do writing, which is sort of guided writing. I will ask a question, and then I will listen for an answer. And I heard you will work through Jacob, and I thought, that's ridiculous. And then Jacob called and said, would you work with me? So I thought, oh, maybe there's something to this guidance stuff.
We have a question. This is from a graduate fellow who works with WHQR. She says Julia Cameron has been with the same publisher for over 20 years, at least for nonfiction, I think. She says, I'd be curious to know if she's also worked with the same editor and how her editing process has changed over the years. We have a community here, Julia Cameron, of writers. And a number of our graduate fellows with WHQR are getting their master's in creative writing.
Well, I want to say I'm no longer with Tarcher because my publisher, who was a muse figure for me, left and went to St. Martin's Press. And so I said to him, I will follow you because he is so invaluable to my creative process. So I followed him, and the next book that I have coming out is coming out with St. Martin's. It's called The Listening Path. And it's a book that's going to make skeptics absolutely rabid.
And when is it coming out, and why do you say that?
It's coming out in a year, and it talks about spiritual practices. And I think that until you try them, you know, skepticism doesn't hold up very well in the face of a practice. So what happened, to answer the question about editors, I've worked with different editors, but I had the same publisher for 23 years. And he would say to me, what are you thinking about? And I would say, well, I'm thinking about listening. And he would say, so write about that. And he always encouraged me to sort of follow where my my pages led me.
So that has really paid off in your own life in terms of, I mean, your own life has been a laboratory for these processes.
Yes, I think, you know, I will write pages and they'll say, why don't you try writing a musical? And I'll think, but I'm not musical. And now I've written two musicals.
I want to talk a little bit about mental health and mental health care, especially in this era of coronavirus and people self-isolating. There are news stories across the country about people's heightened struggles with mental health. And here in North Carolina, when we have daily gubernatorial press briefings, there is often some kind of reference to mental health resources that are available. Why do you think, first of all, this has become, there's heightened awareness of this issue during this time of self-isolation? What is it about the lack of built-in community that contributes to people struggling with mental health issues?
I'm not sure I'm qualified to answer that question.
That's a fair answer. What do you think creativity does in terms of building community, which is another one of the ways this idea for this interview originally came up, because we talked about people isolating and getting more creative and actually through that creativity, not just finding themselves, but actually reaching out to others in different ways. You're teaching an online course now, for example. I'm going to be doing a story later this week about a neighborhood that's found a way to social distance and still put on a weekly talent show in their street. Why?
Well,
why do you?
One of the things that has happened through the virus is that people have become more familiar with technology. And very often people will go to Zoom meetings and they will have a sense of community. They'll be able to Zoom from Santa Fe to Los Angeles, and they'll be able to reach out. One thing that I think is important if with Morning Pages is that as you become more comfortable with yourself, you become able to be more comfortable with others. So it was, as you said before, Rachel, authenticity is the keynote. And authenticity is what leads us into connection.
You're listening to Coastline. Julia Cameron is the best-selling author of The Artist's Way, and she's taking your questions and comments on this Wednesday, April 15th. Have you worked with the ideas in The Artist's Way? You can tell us about it by sending an email during the live Wednesday discussion to coastline@whqr.org. And we have just a few minutes left, so if you want to get that question or comment in, now is the time to do it. A Wilmington artist writes, love your book. My favorite passage is the one for my birthday, September 20th. She says, I am a worrier by nature, so I always thought it was so appropriate for me, and now for this time with the virus. I'm not sure what she means by the one for her birthday, September 20th. Worry is the imagination's negative stepsister. Instead of making things, we make trouble. Culturally, we are trained to worry. When we focus our imaginations to inhabit the positive, the same creative energy that was worry can become something else. And she says, thank you for having Ms. Cameron on today. Worry is the imagination's negative stepsister.
I think that what happens is that we don't live one day at a time. We worry and we think, oh, how much longer will this last? Will we be shut down for months? What will I do for money? And I think that if we ask ourselves, am I okay today, just today, a daily practice. So the daily practice of Morning Pages, the weekly practice of An Artist's State, the daily practice that says, who can I reach out to, perhaps by telephone, to cheer up? So as we put something positive into the day, we begin to feel less worried.
So as we start to work with these tools, The Artist's Date and Morning Pages, and perhaps here in North Carolina, the taking your artist on a walk, what are some of the common pitfalls for people who aren't going through a course with you? Where do people get blocked? What can often stop them from continuing in The Artist's Way?
All right, this is another skeptical question. Is this why do people do U-turns on the artist's way?
Sure. Yeah, that's a better way of putting it. Yes.
I think that people get scared by their own velocity. And I talk in weeks 8 and 9 about this is where people may do U-turns because they're not what they used to be and they aren't what they're going to be. They're sort of caught in the middle. And I think that the basic block is fear. And there's an exercise at the back of the artist's way called blasting through blocks. And you put out a project. You say, here's everything I'm afraid of about this project. And you list your fears. And then here's everything I'm angry about this project. And you list your angers. And then you call what I call a believing mirror, which is someone who thinks positively of you and your talents. And they don't need to fix you. And you read the lists off to them, and then you set about work. So I think it's fear. Which comes down to perfectionism. If I didn't have to do it perfectly, what would I try?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we're getting short on time, but why is it that there are so many blocked artists, Julia Cameron, and why do you think that so many people have allowed perfectionism to get in the way of their own creativity and the fulfillment of their own souls?
So you have two questions. Why are there so many blocked artists?
Mm-hmm.
Was the first question, which I think comes down to our culture's mythology around art. And I would prefer to say that there are so many people who are ready to move into their creativity, who are ready to take risks, who are ready to expand, and that when they do that, they're sort of flying in the face of the belief that there's an elite tribe of artists. I say experiment, see what happens, and you will have breakthroughs.
You said you have a book coming out next year. Tell us the name of the book again.
The Listening Path.
And what else is on Julia Cameron's bucket list?
Well, I woke up the other morning saying, I need to write poetry again. If you go to my website, you'll find that there's an album on there called This Earth, which is poetry. And I found myself just feeling the need to write poetry again. But my guidance also said to me that I was going to be writing a play. So I'm listening and thinking, well, is it going to be a play about the virus? I hope not.
I've heard some people say that this particular time, just because of the stripping away of the busyness, it might become a new creative awakening collectively. We'll see. But that's this edition of Coastline. Julia Cameron, what a pleasure having you with us today. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel.
Coastline's production team is led by Rachel Keith and includes Ken Campbell, Doc Jardin, and Marissa Castrino. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org, get the podcast, or find it on the HQR app. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. ¶¶